Interest is up in gardening this year. Extra time at home, a desire for fresh food. There are lots of good reasons for tending a garden and lots of good advice to be had from a master gardener near you. We reached out to Jackson County Master Gardeners and got Lynn Kunstman to visit once a week to talk about things to do to make a garden healthy and productive. And if you're just now thinking about gardening, it is not too late, as we've been learning. Good stuff goes into the ground even now, while some other good stuff is coming out. Join us at 800-838-3760 and jx@jeffnet.org. Lynn, I guess let me ask a really general question first, and welcome back. Good to have you.
Hi.
So the general question first is, can you still be surprised? I mean, do things show up in your garden sometimes and you go, what on earth is that?
Oh my gosh, yes. Sure. There are always new weeds that are cropping up. You know, they come in, the birds bring them in, or whatever. So yes, I'm always finding weird stuff. And new and interesting insects for me. It's been a big learning curve. Now that I'm, you know, really trying not to spray anything and watching the insect life that's developing in my yard as a result of having a cleaner kind of environment that welcomes a wide variety of insects. So, yeah.
And one of the things I was noticing, too, as I look at the August garden calendar from OSU Extension, Oregon State University Extension, is that you're seeing different phases of bugs often by the middle of August. So, you know, you got to know them as one kind of critter, and now they're emerging, the hidden ones, as a different kind of critter.
Right, exactly. And this is, you know, like right now, the squash bugs are just maxing out on your squash. So you really have to be vigilant about them. They are now in the heat. They love that, and they're coming out en masse, and so you got to watch for them. But also, you know, our bees emerge at different times. Some of our little native bees come out in March, and some of them don't come out until May. And so you're going to see different bees. You're going to see different kinds of predatory wasps. You know, I've noticed now a lot of the European paper wasps, which make those nests that hang from your porch, the little tiny nests.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
They actually are actively hunting in my kale and cabbage and Brussels sprouts for those little green cabbage looper caterpillars. And I've seen them eating them. And so what looks like a yellow jacket will go by, but it's got dangling legs. That's a paper wasp, and you don't want to run and get your bug spray because she is hunting and provisioning her nest, and she is she's eating those caterpillars actively herself, but she's also feeding them to her larva. And so, you know, people panic when they see a bee-type creature out in their yard. Don't do that.
Yeah, what the wasps, they're actually controlling the insects for you, from the sounds of it,
that's
the other insects.
Exactly right. All wasps are predatory. They hunt and eat other insects, flies and caterpillars and those kinds of things. So they are, even yellow jackets, whom I pretty much detest if they're anywhere near me, are good guys. You know, I mean, they provide an ecosystem service. And so we have to start thinking about, okay, if the nest is out in the field, let's leave them alone. You don't have to take gasoline and pour it down the hole. You don't have to, you know, get a bug bomb and squirt them out. Leave them alone. Let them do their thing. They're going to be doing something positive for the ecosystem on your property.
So you mentioned since you've stopped using spray. How long ago was it, and have you gone completely spray free?
Well, not entirely. There are times when the squash bugs in our vegetable garden are so intense that we do use an organic neem oil on them. If they've just overrun the plant, we have to go in with something kind of nuclear, you know, and organic neem oil breaks down in about a 24-hour period. And so it doesn't contaminate soil. And we always spray after dusk when the bees are gone. But that's the other thing. I've got now a big surprise for me this summer. I have squash bees in my yard, and they are a special kind of little bee that only pollinate squash. And you'll find them in clusters inside a squash blossom early in the morning. You don't want to spray anything on your squash, you know, when those bees are on your plants. And so we have to be really careful when we do that spraying.
All right, the neem oil you were talking about, that's N-E-E-M, right?
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And you mentioned bees. I noticed some black bees, which I've seen before, usually boring into wood, I thought. But these are black
yes.
bees hanging around. They looked like they were pollinating lavender or something.
Big, shiny black bees. Mm-hmm. Those are our native carpenter bees. And yes, they do drill into boards and people's fascia boards and house, you know, siding and that kind of stuff. And once again, people kind of, and they are pollinators. They are gathering pollen and nectar for to provision their nest. So the female drills a long hole and then she, you know, lays her eggs with nectar and pollen in between. Each egg gets laid on a little loaf of pollen and nectar. And but she only drills that single hole. See, her larvae are not going to eat the board.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
They're going to eat the food she provides, the pollen loaf, and then they're going to emerge and they're going to go elsewhere. And so even carpenter bees, I ask people not to spray them, not to remove them, because they are providing pollination services for us.
Okay, so they're not eating, so they will drill to make habitat, but they're not going to sit there and eat the wood like termites
That's
would.
Exactly right. So it's not like a, you know, it's not like a borer that gets into your tree and then girdles the plant or does something really nasty, you know, to living tissue or something, or termites that will get in, and they are chewing the wood of your house.
Oh, yeah.
And those you do need to deal with. But the carpenter bees, all she's doing is drilling a single hole and then laying her eggs, and those bees emerge and they leave. So it's not, if you can tolerate having, you know, a little hole in your house, or it's pretty good size hole, then I would ask people not to spray those or plug them up, because then you've buried the young and they're going to die in there. Just let it be and wait until spring. When it's empty, the young have emerged, and then you can plug the hole if you so desire.
I was just looking at the size of the holes. They're not insignificant. I used to get confused, though, because when I first noticed the carpenter bees, when we had that awful pecky cedar siding, it looked like it had been chewed up by something already anyway.
Right. Yeah, and they love cedar siding. They love to go in, and they're very good at drilling precisely so they don't come out either edge. Mm-hmm. You know, they get right in there.
They are, in fact, carpenter bees. That's right. They take care of the wood.
They are carpenter bees. They know what they're doing, yeah.
Lynn Kuntzman, our guest once again on the Jefferson Exchange from the Jackson County Master Gardeners Association, answering your questions and mine about gardening, and obviously moving a little farther afield, getting into the insects a little more specifically. But anything that you want to know about gardening, fair game. By phone, 800-838-3760. You can also share a story with us. Those emails go to jx@jeffnet.org. You know, I've been sort of nodding and going, when you talk about the vegetables that bolt and go to seed, I think I understand that a little better now, because I've been watching the mint around our yard, the peppermint, go to seed. And it seems like once that happens, that the mint itself is not particularly good.
Sure, right. So plants, once they set seed, and it's true of almost any of your perennial plants, they're kind of done for the season. You know, they've accomplished what they wanted to do, which was recreate themselves, you know, in seed form. And so then the plants begin to it's called senescence. Mm-hmm. They start getting senile, right? Kind of like people after we reproduce, then the next step is, you know, you're on into old age.
It's a longer step perhaps, but go ahead.
It takes longer for us. Yeah. So the plants will start to, you know, they start the green kind of phase, they start to kind of get brown. The way to keep them rejuvenated, of course, is to deadhead them or cut the flowers off. And then the plant goes, oh, yikes, I've got to make babies. You know, I've got to stay healthy so I can make babies. And it regenerates the plant tissue, and then it makes more seed heads, or it makes more flower heads. And then it starts the cycle kind of again. So it's sort of a shock to the plant system and to get it rejuvenated.
So this is the reason for deadheading roses, for example, and other flowers like
that. Exactly. If you want to keep roses coming, you need to, otherwise it's going to try and make rose hips, right? It's going to try and make fruit. And then it's kind of, okay, I'm done. My work here is done. And I actually do this with my milkweed that I've planted for my monarchs. I go out and I clip it when it starts to set the first seed pods, because if I let those seed pods go, the plants start getting funky. Mm-hmm. And then the next generation of butterflies is not going to be able to use it. We have two generations here in the valley. We get the third generation and the fourth generation. And if I don't keep the milkweed fresh, the female butterflies aren't going to want to come and lay their eggs in it. So, yeah.
Okay. So it becomes, it's productive if the flowers are off. Okay. Or they're still
right.
Reproducing. Yes. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Ah, you have opened up a whole new world for me here, Lynn.
Ain't nature cool?
It really is. So while we're talking about things like deadheading flowers, I did notice two among the August garden calendar events is pruning raspberries, boysenberries, and other caneberries after a harvest. You know, for a person mm-hmm. who like prunes the apple tree once a year when it's pretty chilly outside, this
right.
seems a little counterintuitive.
It does. So the caneberries you want to take out the canes that have fruited, and you can take those all the way down to the ground, because the new fruit is going to come, or the fruit for next year is going to come on the new canes that are generating from the roots at the base of the plant. And so you select, you know, 5 to 8 of those to remain as your canes for next year. And tie them onto your trellis if you've got a wire trellis or some way of holding those canes up, so that you're rejuvenating the plant. And then what happens is those canes that you've left to grow for next year, they are going to set fruit on the laterals. And so you can actually top them at about 6 feet.
Mm-hmm.
You can just clip them, and they'll send out side branches, and it's the side branches that are going to flower and produce fruit.
This sounds like the putting the tomatoes in the burrow sideways. You're basically tricking the plant to make fruit a different way.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And the berries right now, what you want to be doing with your berries is, you know, continue to fertilize them and really keep them wet this time of year. They like a lot of water, about an inch a week at least, because they're setting fruit, and you want them to be nice and big and plump and, you know, juicy for your freezer or your dessert bowl or whatever.
Right. Okay. Lynn Kunzman, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange from Jackson County Master Gardeners. Questions, comments, stories about gardening, share with us at 800-838-3760 and jx@jeffnet.org. To that point of watering, since we are in a particularly hot spell,
right.
Things dry out quickly. We've noticed some of the things growing in our yard that even the leaves seem to wrinkle.
Yeah,
and get a little yellow over the course of a day.
Right. If you're seeing plants in your yard that are showing water stress, and the way to know is squash plants really show it quickly. You know, if you walk out in the middle of the day and all your zucchini and pumpkins are kind of just limp there out mm-hmm. in the garden, they're looking like they're about to, you know, curl up and die. You know that they are suffering from water stress, and the important thing to do is don't water them at that exact moment. You don't want to put any water on those plants, because then you'll scorch them. Wait until evening, and then make sure you soak them really well. And then, you know, if you have an irrigation system, you might want to pump the time up on those beds that those things are in, because we've had to increase our what we do. We have a drip system, and we increase the minutes as the temperatures rise.
Uh-huh.
You know, we're delivering more water each day. And when you get into triple digits, you need to be sure you're getting enough water on everything, because it really does dry out fast. And if you've got raised beds, then that really can desiccate and, you know, dry out quickly. And you need to make sure you're keeping those root zones moist. I recommend that people get a moisture meter
mm-hmm.
so that they can just plunge it down into the bed and see, because, you know, you put it in the first inch, the top inch might be dry, but down low, you might have plenty of water. And it's a good way to kind of move around your yard. And you can get one that's just got a simple, you know, dry to wet dial, you know, kind of a little meter. And it's really fast and easy to just go and say, oh, no, it really is wet, you know, 6-8 inches down. I'm okay here, because you don't want to overwater and drown your plants.
Right.
But which can also happen, and oddly enough, overwatering a plant, the plant looks like it's water stressed.
Ah, so it looks the same.
Actually, yes. So you really, a water meter. The two important meters I think people need for their yards are a soil temperature meter and a moisture meter.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're overwatering something and the meter, you stick it down 3 or 4 inches and it's going all the way to wet all the time, there's probably too much water in there, unless you've got a riparian plant that wants to be streamside, you know? So I think those are two... They're not expensive, and they're probably one of the best investments you can make in terms of monitoring what's going on in your soil.
And it looks like either one of those gadgets you're talking about can be found for under $10.
Yeah, they're inexpensive. There's a great soil temperature meter that actually shows you, it actually lists what vegetables need to go in at what temperature. It's very cool. There's a big dial. It looks like a big meat thermometer.
It does.
But at 60 degrees, you can plant this list of vegetables. And at this, you know, at 70 degrees, you need to plant these. So you want to make sure your soil's at the right temperature. Put those seeds in at the wrong temperature, they're going to rot.
Ah,
you know.
Okay. So soil temperature, soil thermometer, and moisture meter, each of those can be had for under $10, it looks like.
Yeah,
at
and they're
a garden
locally
store
available at the nurseries or, you know, even probably even like places like Bi-Mart or that kind of, you know, everybody's got them.
So final question, asking for a friend, if your tomato plant hasn't borne tomatoes yet, will it this year?
Sure. So our heirloom tomatoes, if you planted an heirloom, they come on very late.
Mm-hmm.
And so there should be fruit set. If you don't have fruit set, then you've got a problem.
Okay.
But if you've got green tomatoes, absolutely, you're going to get tomatoes. We'll go into October with tomatoes ripening.
Okay,
yeah.
Good to know. A couple seconds left. You want to give a plug for the Master Gardener Plant Clinic again?
Yeah, Master Gardener Plant Clinic online. Go to our website, and you can send pictures of your damage or curiosities to us, and we'll get back to you.
Okay. Lynn Kunstman from Jackson County Master Gardeners Association. Always a pleasure. Thanks for opening up new worlds to us here on the Jefferson Exchange.
My pleasure.
All right. Talk to you next week. That'll do it for this hour of the Jefferson Exchange. We have a split hour two coming up. First, we'll talk about white Christian privilege, and then we'll mark the return of another edition of Summer Reads by talking to Sheila Burns, the co-owner of Bloomsbury Books in Ashland. That's hour two of the Jefferson Exchange coming up. Thank you.